I think it's fair to say we're not going to run very short of examples, but just in terms of recent failures we might have seen in Australia's media when it comes to reporting on the Black Lives Matter protests, race in general, what kind of failures have we seen?
Yeah, I think, you know, as you mentioned, it's an ongoing issue in the Australian media landscape, something that I and lots of others have pointed out for many years, but I think particularly at a moment when there's so much global and local attention on the issue of racial injustice, the higher rates of Indigenous incarceration, and just all the different structural ways that disadvantage plays out in a racial way in Australia, it's sort of highlighted, I think, the gaps in the media landscape. And we saw a couple of very specific examples you know, that attracted a lot of attention and did lead to some apologies. You know, we had a now infamous editorial in the Age newspaper in Melbourne that declared that Australia had no history with slavery. That was criticized by a lot of academics, Indigenous advocates, experts that pointed out that there is a history of slavery in so many different forms that led to an apology. We saw again that same newspaper just a couple of days before the Black Lives Matter rally run a quite incendiary headline accusing Aboriginal protesters of wanting to spit on police and create violent scenes again when those organizers of that rally pointed out that they weren't asked for their comment on that. That led to an apology again. And just more broader topic, in more, I guess, egregious examples, we've seen shows, radio programs on commercial radio declare that the issue of black death in custody is a furphy. We've had Insiders program. It's recently been reported they have never had a non-white panelist in their 20-year history on air. They corrected that with one Indigenous journalist, Bridget Brennan, last week. But the first episode they had after the protest was a panel of all white journalists dissecting this issue of the Black Lives Matter movement. So, look, that's just a couple of minutes on some very recent examples from the past couple of weeks. But it does paint a picture of a media landscape that is at best unaware of the issue of racism and at worst going out of its way to perpetuate stereotypes or factually incorrect basis for the way the country operates.
Even in your examples there, it really runs the gamut from, you know, unaware, basically having a blind spot on race, to actively malicious. Why has the Australian media sort of failed to address these kind of problems that are kind of internal and external?
So it's a really good question. And look, if I was honest with you and I knew that there was one answer, I probably would have had more success in convincing people to rectify it. But I think it's an interesting to compare the Australian experience to what we're seeing in the US. And, you know, the US obviously has a lot of parallels to Australia in terms of a media industry that is dominated by a particular class of people, tend to be white, tend to be very wealthy background, tend to be male. But what we've seen in the last couple of weeks in America is a reckoning that hasn't quite made its way in Australia. We've seen senior editors from a range of publications resign after being exposed for perpetuating, you know, toxic workplace environments or underpaying their staff or people of color. We've seen the Washington Post just today announce they're hiring a team of 9 new journalists specifically focused on covering race and racism in all sorts of areas, in national security, in health, in the environment, in photojournalism. In Australia, we haven't seen those kinds of changes happen yet. And I think it's because largely as a country and as an industry, we're much further behind in conversations. I think Americans are getting better at acknowledging that there is a history of racism, that it manifests itself in newsrooms and all these other environments. In Australia, we're still stuck on the first bit of that conversation, which is acknowledging whether racism exists or not, or acknowledging why we have these discrepancies in news environments. And I think until we can convince people that this is an issue, that it is an issue when 24% of the Australian population come from non-European or Indigenous backgrounds, but our newsrooms are at best 8 to 10% people from those backgrounds, until you can actually say, oh, there's a problem here. We are either not hiring properly, we're not doing enough legwork in schools, universities to make these kinds of professions seem viable for people from marginalized backgrounds, then we're not going to change. We're not going to get the solutions that we need.
Well, speaking of sort of taking this on as a job, you yourself are a journo. Have you seen these issues in the media impact yourself in your professional or just everyday life?
Yeah, like it's an interesting conundrum because as someone who is from from a migrant background, I've often found myself in work environments in the news media where I've been the only person who's not white. And that can present interesting challenges. It can lead to, you know, instances of awkward casual racism, or people see you as the race expert and they want your opinion on this issue, or you get asked to write stories about the community that, you know, you're a member of. And that's an experience that I know a lot of my colleagues have had. You know, for example, I've had friends who come from the Lebanese community in Sydney, and they always got asked to report on stories involving the Lebanese community in Sydney, even though they wanted to be a political journalist or, you know, an environmental journalist or whatever. But it also creates this extra burden, I guess, where you feel compelled to speak out on these issues. When you see your colleagues or your editors make decisions on issues around race that aren't good, you're likely to be the first person to speak out on that, either internally or publicly, because you're the only person with a lived experience who sees that being a problem. And that then means that you are at risk of being seen as someone who's an agitator, being seen as someone who ruffles feathers and rocks the boat, or someone who, you know, can't separate their personal life from their work life. And that has created problems for lots of people in the industry. And a lot of my friends who started out in journalism have left because they didn't like playing that role. And I think one of the easiest ways to resolve that is to have people from all sorts of backgrounds call out bad behavior or bad journalism when they see it. And I think you can draw parallels to the history of women that historically being marginalized and locked out of newsrooms. And, you know, I think if you'd say now it's only incumbent on women journalists in the news environment to call out sexism or to call out sexist reporting, that would clearly be, you know, it's just not a defensible argument. And I think similarly, when it comes to issues of race, it shouldn't just be black or brown or minority journalists who have to stand up and say, this isn't on.
And obviously you've touched on a few of these ones already in terms of what we're seeing overseas and maybe some of the issues we need to confront before we can even deal with it. But where do you think we should go from here? What kind of steps can media outlets really take from dot one in order to deal with this blind spot and this ongoing issue?
Yeah, the good news is that there are a couple of like quite obvious solutions that we can see being rolled out in newsrooms around the world, particularly in places like the UK and America. And, you know, we can ask why we aren't doing that here. Like, why don't newsrooms and news organizations have targets to hire journalists to make sure that newsrooms reflect the diversity of the broader population? And that's just step one. It's not just about getting people in the door that reflect diversity, but making sure that you support them, you provide them with training, you provide them with pathways for promotion. So you see them in senior roles as well. You see them in senior news roles. Like, as far as I'm aware, there's not been a single senior news editor in this country or the editor-in-chief of a daily newspaper that has come from a non-white background. Even SBS, which is the multicultural broadcaster, has never had a news director who has not been from a white background. And that's a pretty extraordinary set of circumstances when you put it as starkly as that. So I think setting very specific goals makes sense. I also think it's important for all news organizations to have editorial policies that interrogate the way that they talk about issues of race and racism, and they have clear guidelines for how these things happen. And when mistakes happen, they own up to them, and they look at the structural reasons why a particular headline or a particular panel was commissioned that didn't reflect the diversity of the community, and not only deal with those issues on a one-off basis, but put in place processes and policies to make sure that on a structural level we don't replicate those things. And I think one example is, you know, Insiders was called out recently, and they since have said, we're sorry, we had one Indigenous journalist on this panel, but why should Insiders, when it has 4 to 5 panelists a week, not regularly reflect the diversity of the community? That's a policy decision that could be implemented by the ABC and all other, you know, news broadcasters or newspaper outlets. I think between hiring and improving editorial policies, we can go a long way in fixing this problem in Australia.
Well, Osman, I know you've had the finger right on the pulse of this one, so I do appreciate you joining us, having a bit of a chat with us about it this morning.
Oh, thanks so much for talking about it. It's an important topic, and I'm really glad that we got to chat about it this morning, Sean.
Absolute pleasure.